Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Hey, everyone. Have you been to the Organic Gardener Podcast website and signed up for our email list? If you go there, you will get my new PDF, 7 Awesome Ways to Find More Time in Your Garden. And it's just some tips that I've learned from listening to my amazing guests who are always sharing with us super effective ways to be a better gardener. So if you head over to the organicgardenerpodcast.com and enter your email, you'll get 7 awesome ways to find more time in your garden. You can also get a copy of our ebook of Organic Gardening Basics. And just all the show notes are there, all the links to our show. So, and I'll be sending out some Golden Seeds newsletters as I get them done. And of course, you'll get a special invitation to join the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook community. Hope to see you there. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast today. I am super excited to introduce my guest, who is a local friend who's been gardening forever and just... anytime you drive by her house, you're just amazed at what you see growing there. Her flowers are gorgeous. Her vegetables are just out of this world. And so I'm going to introduce Leslie Fowler. So welcome to the show, Leslie.
Hi. And happy to be here.
Well, we're excited because I know listeners are going to get lots of golden seeds from you today. That's what I kind of call my little... other people call them golden nuggets or value bombs, but I just came up with this golden seeds, and I know you're going to be full of them. So do you just want to tell listeners just a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, I've lived in this valley for 34 years. I have 3 kids and 4 grandkids. I have an acre of land on a beautiful lake. I have a 30-by-50 organic garden and a pretty large orchard. There's like 17 trees in my orchard. Maybe it feels big because it's just me here. So that seems like a lot for one person.
That's a pretty substantial size.
Yeah, and they're fully producing. They're, you know, we've had the orchard in for like 20 years, so.
Nice. What kind of trees? Are they apple trees or?
They're primarily apple, different varieties of apple. I do have a pear tree. But we had some cherries, and some plums, but they just didn't, one thing or another happened and they just didn't survive. We did plant a peach tree one time and people around here were like, oh, you can't grow peaches around here. And it was an Alberta peach and we planted it and babied it. Every fall we'd wrap insulation around the trunk and, you know, really protect it from the winter, soak it down really good in the fall. And finally, on its like 8th year, it was the first year it produced, and it was actually just loaded with fruit, just loaded. And unfortunately, there was 4 main branches, and they were so loaded down with fruit that it started splitting the trunk. As soon as we noticed, we propped, you know, each branch up with a 2x4 and tried to support the trunk, and we had a wonderful harvest. And then the next spring, it didn't winter over, so we lost it.
Aww.
Yeah. And I also have just numerous flower beds. I have a raspberry patch. I have a big root cellar that I use to store a lot of my crops. And what else about my, let's see. Oh, I work at a therapeutic boarding school for young women, and I teach horticulture there.
Really? Awesome. Okay. Yeah. I did hear about you teaching horticulture there now that I think about it. So, well, there, that's a great thing for them to learn. And it's a beautiful place out there. So, I'm just kind of curious. So is it a little bit different growing by a lake? Does that change your climate?
A little bit comparatively to town, for example. Town will often get a frost about 3 weeks before I do.
Oh.
And, you know, in the spring as well as in the fall. So I tend to have about a month long or so growing season compared to town.
But is that because of the lake, or that's just because you're out north of the town, just kind of out in that climate?
Well,
the lake doesn't really seem to affect it, maybe, or?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I'm only like 5 miles from town, so But we are kind of down the lake where my place is kind of down in a hole a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it's because of the lake or, you know, I'm kind of in the ponderosa pine, dry, warm area. So that could be it. I'm not sure. But, and of course, with Montana, you never know. I've seen it snow in July. So,
right.
You never know.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been actually working at the Wilderness Club, which is like right around the corner from you this summer. And just, you know, after living here for 25 years almost and always being up, you know, we're south of town and up against the mountains to mm-hmm. see the different out there. Like the views have been just breathtaking. I'm like, oh, my goodness. And then, yeah, it is a little bit of a different climate out there. So be interesting to, it's amazing how many different microclimates there are around here. And we're like the opposite. We're like, because we're south of town, we're like 3 weeks behind town.
Right.
So, So Leslie, I do always start the show kind of asking about your very first gardening experience. Like, you know, were you a kid? Were you an adult? Who were you with? What'd you grow? Like, are you a Montana girl? Where are you from originally?
Actually, I grew up in LA. Really? So I was raised in the city, in the suburbs of LA. And although we did the residential area where I lived, there was a lot of orange and lemon groves at the time. Unfortunately, they're not there anymore. But I just remember being fascinated by those trees. I would go make little forts and play in there. But my real first gardening experience was with my great-grandmother. She gardened her life. And so I was pretty young when I was introduced to it. I would just garden with her. I just adored her. And I can remember growing, you know, pumpkins, all kind of the fun stuff that kids like to grow, carrots. And I kind of quickly realized that her food always tasted better, you know? So that kind of sparked my interest. And then I just, you know, of course, in my teen years, I didn't garden a lot. When I started going to high school, I actually went to high school in Colorado. Oh. And I went to an alternative school there. And we had a greenhouse and a garden. And then our cafeteria, so to speak, was called Munchie Central. And you could actually take a class and get a home ec credit and feed the school. And so we would always, you know, they'd have you create your own menu. So we'd usually just go out to the garden, see what was ready, try to create a menu around that. And that's when I first got exposed to more organic foods, eating more healthy, that kind of thing. And it just, I loved it. So
I was just going to say a couple of things. So I actually went to LA this spring and I was just amazed at how I was in Venice Beach and it just smelled like, we were walking around in this like fragrant perfume bottle. I mean, it was just incredible. The gardens, I had no idea. So I was just going to say that little connection. And then that's cool that you went to a school where you could cook and learned about organic foods. And so then how did you end up in Montana?
Well, that's kind of a funny story. So a group of friends and I, when we were in high school, decided that we really wanted to like live off the land.
Oh, nice.
And so we were going to all move. There's kind of a group of us move to Alaska and try to do that. We wanted to kind of go as far north as possible. A large part of the group went ahead of time. And I ended up back in California. And a really good friend of mine was like, you need to come up here. And so I ended up going up there. And, you know, we were there for about a year. And quickly realized that it's really hard to do that up there. Land was expensive and, you know, there was a lot of tundra and, you know, it was just difficult to do. And in the meantime, the group kind of started breaking up a little and it ended up with just two couples. And we decided, okay, we're going to head down to the lower 48 and the first town we come to when we cross the border, that's where we'll live because we want to stay as far north as possible. So we rolled into Eureka and I was like, oh yeah, I think I could live here. And I've been here ever since.
Wow. That's crazy. Okay, cool. Yeah. I like that story. So, well, you kind of already told us how you learned how to garden organically. That was from when you were in high school. So did they have a garden at your kitchen too there?
Yeah, we had a greenhouse and a garden. Yep.
Okay.
And so, then when I moved here and we were doing our little homestead, so we bought 40 acres of land up above Fortine, and we had teepees that we lived in, and we had a garden, and, you know, just right away, it made much more sense to us to kind of, you know, we were so aware of the planet and how it was being treated, and we wanted to build it up rather than poison it. And you could get the same, you know, if not better results, in my opinion, with gardening organically, adding a lot of organic matter and those kinds of things. So it just was kind of a no-brainer.
Nice. So, but yeah. Like, did you like study it besides at school at all, or have books, or are you just from practice and like your grandma, or?
Right. A little bit of everything. Back then we read a lot of books. And then we started meeting people in this area, and my favorite was just to talk to the old timers and the farmers, and got a lot of good tips from them. And a lot of it's just from trial and error experience. I did take the Master Gardener course through MSU later in my life. But I honestly feel like I've learned the most just from books and talking to other gardeners and trial and error.
Nice. I know what I was going to say earlier was just that you were talking about how your grandmother kind of, started you like realizing about food. And I just always like to encourage listeners that, if their kids or grandkids don't really show any enthusiasm for being in the garden, just, you know, kind of ignore it. And the more enthusiastic you are, you know, if they show any resistance, like, that you'll be surprised at how much they, you know, take it in. And later on in life, a lot of my listeners have talked about, like, they totally resisted when they were young, and then as adults, you know, they got into it. So I just like to encourage people to, you know, just any little bit you can share. And our grandkids are here. Liberty's here this weekend with her two kids, and so we had all the kids in the garden yesterday. It was pretty fun picking apples off the tree up on the ladder, just different things. So anyway,
sometimes I will I have all grandsons, so I'll say, go out in the dark garden and look for worms and bugs, and so we go out there and they love to do that. I have a little bug box and a net, and you know, we go out there and then I'll be like, oh, look at this carrot is ready, and you know, kind of lure them out there that way instead of let's go garden, you know. And then inevitably we end up doing things out there, which is really fun.
Oh, that's perfect. I like that. That's a great idea. I think listeners will love that. See, I knew you were going to drop tons of golden seeds. Because that would be totally me. Let's go garden, or let's go weed, or let's go help grandpa do something like that. Right. But that would be a much better way to get them excited about it. So, all right. Well, do you want to tell us about something that grew well in your garden this year? What's growing good out there?
The weeds.
Right? I just took a Snapchat of Mike this morning. He's like, man, the weeds like burst overnight.
Yeah, of course weeds have grown the best. I don't know. I got things in pretty late.
We did too.
Yeah, because I garden for my job, it's really hard to garden for, you know, 8 hours and then come home and feel inspired to do the same thing. So yeah. I just kind of plugged away at it, and I did end up getting like more than I probably need in. And so things are doing really well. I just kind of got a late start.
I think it was that kind of year. We ended up with a really late start. So like Mike's kind of trying this like fall crop thing. Like our broccoli is going to be more of a fall crop than like, you know, something that would be over in the spring. We just picked the first head just 2 days ago or 3 days ago, and most of them are just barely growing. So that's kind of different for us. And just, I don't know, it seemed like we had an early spring and warm, but then I don't know, just a busy year this year, I think. So,
and it's doing really well. I just want to mention my orchard, my apple trees are just loaded with apples. I mean, I had to even thin a little bit. They're so loaded. They look like grapes on there. It's amazing.
Nice. Yeah. Do you have any tips for people about fruit trees? Like, you know, things that you've learned over the years besides your peach story about growing apples, or anything you'd suggest? Or
Well, actually, the orchard was kind of my husband's baby. You know, I did the gardens and flower beds, and he did more of the orchard. I would help him. I learned a lot from him, but that was kind of more his passion. Okay. So just, I mean, you know, if you're going to be putting in an orchard, make sure it's a good sunny location. A little bit of a slope is actually good for good drainage. Yeah. Just want to make sure the soil is really good. Either amend each hole as you plant the tree or just put it in a place that already has like pretty good soil. And, you know, when you put them in, just really, you know, doing a lot of research about how to plant, and you need to stake the trees down to support them and things like that. A lot of people around here think you lose trees over the winter because of the cold in the winter, but it's actually because you really need to soak them down really well in the fall. Yeah, so I will start, you know, if I'm anticipating a frost in 2 to 3 weeks, I'll put my soaker sprinklers out there like overnight. I'll just soak it all night and then move it over. And you want to water on the drip line, not at the trunk, like at the base of the tree. And fertilizing, it's the same thing. You want to fertilize and water out at the drip line because that encourages the roots to reach outward.
And so is the drip line, like, I don't know what that means, like the end of the branches or something?
Yeah, the drip line is like the canopy of the tree. So however big the tree is, like how far the branches go out. Imagine if it were to start to rain, it's going to drip off those ends. And that's where you want to water and fertilize.
Oh, that's interesting. So then should you have like a hole in the ground, like where it's bare dirt all the way around? I know you're supposed to have like a circle of like bare dirt. Should it go all the way out to that drip line?
No, I don't think that's necessary.
Just get that grass wet.
Yeah, my understanding is just you can, around here, you can get a lot of little voles and mice and pocket gophers in the winter that can hide in that grass and chew on the trunk and the roots and stuff. And if you keep it bare around there, it kind of protects it from any, I can't think of the word, not invaders, but critters.
Awesome.
Well, other than that is just, you know, pruning, of course. You want to do it while the tree is dormant, but it's better to do it close to spring. I mean, it's dormant all winter, but you wouldn't want to go out and prune in December. You know, this year we pruned really early. I had some friends came out and helped me prune because it's a pretty big job. And we did it in February. And we got an early spring, so yeah, you want to prune, you know, before, while they're dormant. And yeah, that's, and I, you know, my orchard is organic. If I do need to spray, I use neem oil.
Oh, you do? Okay.
And you want to do that. And I also think my orchard does really well because there's some people that have honeybees relatively close by. So whenever it's blooming, I always seem to have plenty of honeybees. Yeah, and then once the blooms drop off and the fruit sets, that's when you want to spray.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't spray this year. I didn't have time, and the apples look great. I don't have any worms that I can tell so far.
Oh, that's interesting, because I was just going to say, what are you spraying for anyway?
Yeah, usually worms. And the other thing, if you keep your orchard really, really healthy, let me reverse that. If you don't take good care of your orchard and these trees get in any kind of distress, like if you don't water enough, fertilize enough, prune them properly, they get into distress and they actually send out a pheromone that like attracts insects. So if you keep your orchard really, really healthy, you know, you shouldn't really need to spray.
Okay. Well, that's great, because I know my listeners are really into trees. Like this guy, Russ Medge, from this place called Simply Trees in Utah, he's like always in my top five most downloaded episodes. So he talks about, does the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. If you keep your orchard healthy, if you keep your fruit trees healthy, that's the best thing you can do. So you're just like, you know, emphasizing that and giving us some really great actionable, you know, tips that we can take, and just lots of firsthand knowledge. So that was perfect.
Great.
So is there something you're excited to do different next year, or something you're going to try new? I know you've been doing it for a while, but anything you're... Yeah.
I actually try something new every year. you know, because I feel like that's how you learn. One thing I did one year, so I had heard that the Native Americans used to catch fish and put them underneath their corn. So I went down to the lake and I caught, at the time we had a bunch of sunfish in there, and I caught a bunch of sunfish and I brought them up to the garden and I dug down and put sunfish in and planted a corn on top of each one. And then on my other half of my corn patch, I didn't do that because I like when I experiment, that's usually what I do. Like I'll try some method and then on the other side, I won't do that method and then I'll see, you know.
Cool. You're just a natural scientist.
I find it intriguing. Anyway, so I did that and I didn't really notice any difference. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. But then the next year I put broccoli there and I was getting these like huge heads of broccoli, just beautiful, green, tight, dinner size plate or larger heads of broccoli. And I was like, what the heck is going on? And then I remembered that that's where I put the fish in the year before. So I guess it just took a while for them to like break down.
Nice. That's a great tip. And especially like broccoli is like my favorite thing. Like, and Mike planted a ton of broccoli this year because last year I was just whining. I'm like, if I had a garden, I think I'd plant all broccoli.
Yeah. So, and I do, usually I do like crop rotation. Like corn is a heavy feeder and so is broccoli. So normally I wouldn't put it there. I'm not sure why I did. It was probably just the layout of the garden. It's because I do companion planting. So I try to plant certain things with other things. And I'm not sure why the broccoli ended up there because normally I would plant like a light feeder where I had a heavy feeder the year before. But yeah, I love to experiment and do different things. One year I wanted my garden to be really even more beautiful. So I like a mandala garden. I made it in the shape of a circle and I did raised beds and they were all like triangles and different shapes to make this mandala. And I planted lots of flowers and herbs in with my vegetables and I just weeded every single day. It was like my priority and it was like gorgeous. It was doing so well. And it was probably late July and we got one of our typical Montana summer thunderstorms came through and it hailed like 1 inch size ball or maybe half inch size ball of hail. And in about 20 minutes, it destroyed the entire garden.
Oh no. Oh my goodness.
It was really sad. I actually cried.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, it was awful. And I did get some root crops that year, you know, the things that were safe underground kind of perked back up. That was like a lesson too. Like, you know, like I said earlier, anything can happen around here. So it's like, yes, I garden and I never get it so fussy that, you know, that much time into it like I did that year. But I like to, I've tried cover crops. I'm really experimenting right now with a no-till garden. You know, tilling can kill a lot of the microorganisms and worms and things like that. So I've been experimenting a lot with that and having pretty good results.
Okay. Do you want to just touch on companion planting a little? Because I know my listeners are pretty interested in that. And some people have talked about it a little, but we can never have enough about that.
Right. So a lot of organic gardening books have a companion planting like chart. I mean, that's where I kind of know a lot of them by heart now. But, I love the Encyclopedia of Organic Gardening, Organic Gardening in Cold Climates, which was written by a woman that actually lives in Montana. And they have great little charts in there. And so it's the whole premise is that you're planting plants together that benefit each other in some way. And it might be something like, you know, you're planting peas that are grow up the fence with carrots that are going to grow down in the ground so that you're like utilizing your space better. And like tomatoes, you can plant basil, parsley. I mean, they have other carrots actually that just help them to grow better. I put tons of marigolds in my garden. They're kind of the workhorse of the garden. They tend to deter pests. You know, they have a strong odor and especially in your cabbage family. and like cabbage family likes a lot of herbs, too, strong smelling herbs. And I've actually, you know, I've had crops where I've done the companion planting and then do a few where I didn't, and they would get like those little white cabbage moths, which mm-hmm. they worms. And then my area that had all the herbs and marigolds did not, you know, so I've seen it firsthand, you know, how it works. And I always plant petunias in with my beans, and it actually makes the flavor of the bean better. So it may not necessarily always be a pest deterrent, but it can, like I was talking about earlier, you could plant a heavy feeder with a light feeder, things like that. So that, you know, they may have different ways in which they help each other. But for me, because I'm an organic gardener, I love that it, you know, helps with pest control and nutrients and things like that. So I highly recommend doing it. And plus it looks really pretty, I think.
I'll say. Okay, so how about like a tip for getting petunias started? Because that's always been a hard one for us.
Yeah.
Any tips for that? Are they hard to get going?
I actually don't try to do that. Have not had a lot of success either. I actually have a friend that has, you know, he's like done commercial gardening. And so he orders plugs from a company, and we just go in on it together on the order. And they come in these little like 1-inch little plugs, and when they arrive, you just, within the first day or two, you just pop them out and basically transplant them into a bigger pot and do that a couple times, and they do great. But starting them from seed, I've never had much luck, even with a greenhouse, so I kind of leave that to the large growers, growing companies.
But see, that's a great tip, because like, I'll quit trying to get Mike to grow them from seed for me, because that's, you know, and just go with, maybe try to find plugs. I've never done that. I usually end up just, you know, and I usually get frustrated because I'll go to like Stewart's or some local nursery at like the 4th of July is always like when I'm looking, and they're always like way sold out. So I'll look for plugs early in the season next year.
Yeah. And it's also more cost effective, because you have to do, they come really tiny, you have to do a lot of transplanting, but you can get a whole flat, and you have to buy a lot too. That's the other thing, you have to buy like a whole flat, but the price by the time, you know, it's said and done is more than half, you know, less than half of what you would pay at the nursery for the same plant.
Yeah. And that's okay, because I love petunias, and I feel like I can never have enough of those. And then we could give them to friends. That'd be great. Like a Mother's Day, you could give out like bouquets, and I'm going to look into that next year.
Just the deer love them too, though. They're like candy.
Right. Well, we have, I mean, everything. We don't even try to grow anything outside of the fence. You should, someday you'll have to come back, because I'm pretty sure you guys were at our wedding, and like, you would not believe what Mike has done here. It is like a totally different place. And then we dug like a 560-foot well 2 years ago. So now he has like even like a little mini farm.
Wow. Awesome. I would love to see it.
Yeah. All right. So do you want to, well, you've kind of told us about some things that didn't work, but do you want to tell us about something that didn't work well maybe this season or something?
Sure. I think the only thing that didn't do well is I tried to plant some pak choy in too late, and it just went to seed. Like, I kept waiting for it to get bigger. Like, it germinated, it started growing, and then it just bolted with one of those hot weeks that we had. Like, it never got big enough to really harvest. Mm-hmm. So like, good, you know, and I should have known it's in the cabbage family. Like, it's more of a spring and fall crop, but I just wanted some. And so I thought, what the heck, I'll give it a shot. And yeah, it didn't work out so well. So, you know,
maybe if you still have a few seeds, try some for this fall.
Yeah,
it was just that kind of a year, because we had that huge like 100-degree weather like the first 2 weeks of June or something, or the end of it, like crazy. And then it got cold and wet again. Like, yeah, we had like no spinach. The only spinach we had was like what came up from last year, and it was like good for like 3 days, and then it was gone. And just, I have like very little bit of lettuce, and just, it's just been a weird year.
At work, I planted, they have a large greenhouse where I work, and we actually in February planted kale, spinach, tons of different variety of lettuce, and just in big barrels and greenhouse, and we got great crops. Great crops, yeah. But then when I tried to plant some outside, you know, in like late May, mid to late May, yeah, it just didn't do so well.
Yeah. And it was like that, where it felt like you could go out and garden in February and the beginning of March this year again, too. I remember that, being like, got to be patient. I know it looks like we can plant, but you can't. And so,
yeah.
before we get to the root of things, we're going to take a moment to thank our sponsors, my good friend, Dacia Daly from Simply Josephine.
It's all about handcrafted soaps and apron love here at Simply Josephine. Located in Montana's beautiful Tobacco Valley, I create everything from my home studio. Currently, I offer 6 different kinds of handmade soaps, 3 different salves, using wildcrafted plant medicine from right here in our beautiful valley. In addition to my body care products, I also make several styles of aprons. Everything is available at simplyjosephine.com. We want to share a little love with the Organic Gardener Podcast listeners. We're offering 15% off. Use code OGP15 at checkout. Thanks and have a beautiful day. SimplyJosephine.com.
Now it's my first sponsor, Robin Kellison from the Good Seed Company. Welcome, Robin.
Yay! Thank you. I'm so happy to be here and very happy to be your sponsor. We have a large variety of locally adapted, open-pollinated, non-GMO vegetable, flower, and herb seeds. And we hope you'll enjoy visiting our website, goodseedco.net or Good Seed Montana, and seeing the resources that we offer for becoming a better gardener, a better seed saver, and a member of building resiliency around food in your community.
Okay, Leslie, we're going to get to the root of things. So my question for the root of things, my first one is, which activity is your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Or do you even have one?
I would say cleaning it out in the fall. Mm-hmm. It's over, so I'm always a little sad.
Right?
I'm not a huge winter person. I used to be when I was younger, but I'm kind of over it. And I love to garden. I'm a summer girl, and you know, it's always just kind of sad to me when I have to like pull everything out, and it's hard too. It's like you get, you know, things, it's just hard for me actually physically to like pull big, huge plants out. I usually have to dig a lot, and yeah, it's just not my favorite thing to do.
All right. So then on the flip side, what is your favorite activity?
Pretty much everything else. of course, harvesting is like probably the best because you get to eat all the goodies. But I love planting. I love weeding. I love thinning, mulching. I don't really like to wear gloves. Sometimes I do just because my hands will get really trashed. But I actually just like the feel of the soil. I really just like all aspects of it. I don't think there's like a favorite, maybe just harvesting.
Okay.
Like the fruits of your labor, you know, it's kind of nice. And sharing with other people. That's the other part I like about harvesting. I always share with whoever needs it. I usually plant more than I ever know what to do with. So.
Well, how about, you know, I haven't asked this question in a long time, but I used to ask it repeatedly because like one of my like troubles with the garden is that everything always comes on at once and I never know what to do with all of it. You know, we can share with people at work and share with kids and friends, but it just seems like I always get overwhelmed with just too much harvest coming on at one time.
Right.
Do you have any like tips for that part of it?
Sure. One thing that I do is I succession plant and like this year when I put in my carrots, I hardly plant anything in rows. I mostly block plant. So I will do a little block of carrots 1 week and then I'll wait like 2 weeks and then I'll put in another block and then I'll wait 2 weeks and put in another block. I can usually get 3. And usually the last block is the one that I will put straw over and save for the winter. So like a really great tip for carrots is you wait till the first light frost and then you cut all the tops off and you put straw on top of it. You know, pretty thick, like a good foot of straw. Oh. And then put a tarp over it and you can dig carrots all winter long.
Now, what do you mean cut the tops off? Like how low?
Right to the ground.
Okay.
You just basically, after you get a frost, you just cut the tops, you know, right to the ground. Because if you don't and you put the straw on top, it gets really slimy.
Okay.
And sometimes they kind of try to grow and they'll get little white hairy roots all over the carrots. But if you cut the tops off and put the straw down, So usually the first two crops I eat, and then the third crop that I planted, I try to store for the winter.
Wow. Awesome. Do you know Palm Collins, right?
I do.
So his new wife, Kathy O'Leary, she's also been in the top 10, which is like crazy because she has no social media presence whatsoever. Uh-huh. And she just repeatedly gets downloaded over and over. And that was one of her tips. But she didn't put the part about cutting the tops off. But she talked about the straw and harvesting them all winter. And I don't think she mentioned putting a tarp over it either. So I like mm-hmm. that part too.
Yeah, if you get a lot of wet snow or rain, then the straw actually freezes. And it's really hard to get it off to mm-hmm. dig carrots out. So if you put a tarp over it, it keeps the straw dry. And you just peel it back. You know, you can get a broom and brush the snow off and just peel it back, and the straw's dry and fluffy. The only problem I've had, sometimes I'll get mice in there. The only downfall is they like that warm straw and they can eat carrots. So it's like the perfect little home for them. But it doesn't happen every year. You know, it's like sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't.
So then, if you get all those mice, how do you get rid of them in the spring?
Actually, if I go out to dig carrots and there's been mice, I trap them right then and there. I set traps. Yeah.
So Leslie, what's the best gardening advice you've ever received?
A lot from the old timers. I love talking to just older people that have lived around here. Probably one of the best things, I had an old gentleman tell me, that your crops are only as good as your soil. Mm-hmm. And that is like so true. When I tell people that are trying to that are new to gardening, or they're just moved somewhere and they want to put in a garden, it's like you can do, you know, buy these great plants or good quality seeds or do all the hard work. But if you don't really amend your soil and build it up before you do all that, you know, you're not going to get as good a crops as, you know, I really recommend in the fall, like hauling in like good source of manure, straw and leaves, compost, you know, amending your soil, like doing soil testing, see where it lies, and then adding whatever you need to get it the right pH. And then, of course, the consistency. If you have really clay soil, you're going to want to add sand and loam and a lot of organic matter. Really doing that in the fall so that in the spring, you know, you have this hopefully beautiful soil to plant in.
All right. That's a great, I don't think anybody said that about bringing it. Maybe they have at this point. Like, it's hard for me to remember everything. Cause you're like episode 152.
Oh,
so
awesome.
Yeah, it's going really good. You might even I'm just about to break 200,000 downloads, and it might be for your episode. So
that should be
cool. Right about the schedule.
One other cool tip that I got from an old timer was he said, always plant your potatoes on Good Friday.
Really? Ooh.
Seems kind of early to me sometimes, but I've done it many times and it's always gone really well, but I've also planted later and it's done fine as well. But I just, always remember that when it's Good Friday, I'm like, oh, I should get my potatoes in.
All right. I always plant my sunflower seeds on Earth Day.
Oh, nice.
Good Friday would have been early this year, right? Because Easter was that's when I went to LA for Easter weekend, the end mm-hmm. of March. So it would have been the beginning of March putting your potatoes in.
Right. It seems early, but I've done it. I did not do it this year. I was really late getting everything in, but I've done it numerous times and always had a lot of success. So.
Okay. Well, Mike's going to like that. What's your favorite tool? Like, if you had to move, is there a tool you couldn't live without or you'd want to take with you?
Probably my little hand rake. You know, I mean, once the garden's in, I mean, I use it a lot when I'm weeding and just, you know, hand fluffing up the soil because I'm trying not to do the till garden. So I do a lot of that by hand. So probably that and a shovel would be the main things. I like to do raised beds, so I couldn't really do that without my shovel.
Now, do your raised beds, do you have them like in like boxes or anything, or you just have your soil kind of built up?
Yeah, I just build my soil up.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. And you know, I just meant to say on the last part, Having healthy soil has got to be the number one theme of my podcast. Like, I've been thinking if I was going to write a book about the things I've learned from my podcast, it'd be like how to create healthy soil, because that's what everybody says. Like, you know, to create, have a healthy garden and the best produce, you're going to get healthy soil. And then the second tip has been, you know, water really profusely. Like, make sure you're getting enough water at your roots. So. Mm-hmm. And then John Moore in Australia was the first person who talked about a no-till, you know, don't dig, no dig, you know, the no-tilling thing. And so, you know, that's something I had no idea about, had never heard about till I started my podcast. And that seems to be, you know, kind of like a permaculture thing that's people are talking about everywhere I go.
It's kind of harder to do, I would think, on a large scale, like on a farm. Oh. It's more labor intensive, you know. In a way, I mean, because I make raised beds and I move them. I guess if you just kept the same bed in the same spot and didn't till it, it wouldn't be labor intensive. But I move mine around. So
how do you move? What do you mean you move them?
Well, like if I have, you know, because my needs change all the time. When I had a family of five, you know, I planted a lot more. So I would have like a 4 foot wide bed the whole length of my garden, like 50 feet. Well, and then maybe one of my kids moves and goes off to school or whatever, then I don't need to plant as much, and maybe I want to have them go a different direction, or like when I did the mandala garden, oh, I want these pretty shapes, or, you know, so I don't use the same spot over and over. And a lot of times the reason I move them too is like 1 year, so I mulch straw in my pathways. And so then the next year where the pathway was, I take the soil from the raised bed and throw it into what was the pathway and then put a bed there.
Oh.
So I'm always kind of moving them around. That's just kind of something I do. I have never read like you're supposed to do that, or it's probably actually goes against, if you're trying to avoid like soil compaction, then you probably shouldn't have a bed in a pathway, but there's so much organic matter. I've never had a problem doing it that way. So,
okay.
As I get older, though, I consider, you know, having raised beds, I won't have to bend down so far, you know.
That's what I love about them, getting to sit on the edge. Mike has like so many nice little raised beds. He's like that too. Like, they're all different. The only thing I have a problem with the different shapes is it's really hard to pull that hose around all those corners and stuff. But he's got, and then his new little mini farm, it's just like he's just built up the dirt and the raised beds out there. There aren't like the little things to sit and weed and harvest and all that kind of thing. But yeah. And it's kind of neat, like, having both gardens now, and the comparison between the mini farm out there and the, you know, the little beds he's always worked on, and just it's just kind of different. So I've liked that part, and like, it's made me feel like I can take over more of the garden that's closer to the house where he has all these little raised beds, because I've watched him for so long do that. I feel really comfortable there. I get out in that mini farm and I'm kind of like a little overwhelmed. So so what's your favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. I love to make a quiche, just a veggie quiche. You can actually take cauliflower and put it in your food processor, and you add like Parmesan and olive oil, and I can't remember what else is in. You press it into the bottom and it makes a crust, and then just fill it with, I really just fill it with whatever, leeks, tomatoes, broccoli, zucchini. I'll just throw a little bit of everything in there, peppers. And then eggs, it's great. If you have chickens, you can put your own eggs in, and it's delicious.
Nice. I don't think anybody's mentioned that. And that's one of my favorite foods. And I like that cauliflower crust. I always make that crust from the Broccoli Forest cookbook. That's kind of a whole wheat crust, but a cauliflower crust sounds easy and yummy.
Yeah, and if you're gluten-free, it's nice alternative. For that, another recipe that my kids always insist that I make is I make this tomato corn chowder. Ooh. And I'll only make it with stuff from the garden, because it's just not the same. I've tried in the winter, sometimes I'll start craving it and try to go to the store and get stuff to make it, and it's just not the same. I don't even do it anymore, but it's delicious.
And how do you make that?
Well, I haven't made it yet this year because my tomatoes aren't ripening very well. You take about 4 or 5 ears of corn, and you cut all the kernels off and scrape it really good and retain it in a bowl. And then it's got, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, it's got onions, garlic, tomatoes. You saute all that, carrots. I'm trying to think what else is in it. I don't know, just a bunch of veggies. And then you add the corn, you simmer it till it's soft. Oh, potatoes. And then you can just take some milk and put a little bit, I'm gluten-free actually, so I just put a little gluten-free flour and mix it up in my milk. And then you just pour it in and turn it way down, and you can top it with some cheese, and it's really yummy.
Ooh, I'm going to try that because Mike loves corn chowder and he loves this vegetable soup. And so that sounds like it would be good. No, I just have to ask really quick. So
sure.
You said cut the kernels off the corn. Did you cook the corn first or cut them off raw? Nope.
Cut them off raw. Okay. And then you want to use the backside of the knife and scrape the, like, get all the pulpy juice out as well. Oh. Okay. Yep. You just do it raw. And I also like to do a lot of juicing. Yeah, I love to do like carrot, apple, kale is really good. Yeah, I have tons of different juice recipes that I like.
Okay.
That's one thing you were asking earlier about everything coming on at once. Mm-hmm. I've cooked with it, I've stored it, I've put it in the root cellar, I've dehydrated some. I don't do much canning anymore, but I used to do a lot of canning and there was still a lot left. I do a lot of juicing because it takes like a large quantity of produce just to make like a little bit of juice. So it's a way that you can kind of use up the extras. Yeah.
That's a good tip. And that's kind of a good way to think about it. That like I always kind of get overwhelmed with the juicing thing, but like maybe if I just thought about doing it at like, you know, that one time a year, I wouldn't feel so overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Yeah. Do you have a favorite internet resource? I mean, you kind of learned a lot of your stuff probably before the internet was, you know, you've been doing it for so long now, but anywhere you go?
I'm not super into the whole electronics thing. We had a problem with aphids at where I work this year, and I just Googled it, you know, and I don't really pay attention to the different sites. I read several, you know, organic methods for controlling aphids and you know, whatever pops up, I check out several different ones until I get enough information to try a few things. So
what worked? Did you find something that worked?
Well, what ended up working was ladybugs.
Oh, excellent.
We tried some spray, a cayenne, garlic and soap. And that didn't, I mean, it knocked a few of them out, but also some of the plants didn't like that. They got really yellow and curled up. So I was like, oh no. And then we tried another spray that had some essential oils in it. I tried the neem oil. But what really worked the best was the ladybugs.
Okay, cool. How about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine or anything?
Well, I love Mother Earth News. I've read those for years. But probably the two books that I mentioned earlier, the Encyclopedia of Organic Gardening. It's really thick. Pretty much anything you need to know is like in there. And the Organic Gardening for Cold Climates is one of my favorites.
Have to check that one out. I haven't seen that. And Mike was just looking at the Encyclopedia of Organic Gardening the other day because I brought garlic home from Theodora's. Uh-huh. And we've never planted garlic, believe it or not. So that's going to be our new thing this fall. So he was like, where's that encyclopedia that tells you all this stuff?
Yep.
Cool.
I love that one. And it's got a really good section on orcharding. So if you want to put in an orchard, it talks about in detail, like how to prune, everything. I mean, pretty much everything.
Okay, good to know. All right, well, we're at the final question already. If there's one change you would like to see, Leslie, to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
Definitely feel like it's important. This is why I love my job. I feel like it's really important to be teaching our children like where their food comes from. how to grow their own food, kind of expose them to all of that. It's astonishing to, you know, a lot of kids have no idea. They think food comes from the grocery store. Like, they have no idea where their food comes from. So being able to do that for my job and seeing the excitement in their eyes of growing something and being able to eat it is just so rewarding. So I feel like getting the next generations to be more aware of that and maybe inspire them to actually, them and anyone, like inspiring people to grow their own food, I think could make a huge difference. Just imagine if even people in cities, instead of having a front lawn, they had a garden, you know, and if enough people did that, imagine the impact that would have globally. And I really love the idea of community gardens. I've seen a lot of articles like in inner cities, where they'll take an old parking lot or an old, you know, lot somewhere and turn it into a garden. Those kinds of things I think are pretty crucial.
Nice. I like that. Yeah. And there's this guy, Curtis Stone, who talks a lot. He's got this thing called the Urban Farmer, who talks a lot about, he's kind of more like, you know, growing for profit and for market. He's taken the principles from that Jean-Martin Fortier, who is up in Canada, and he started this big, he has a book called The Market Farmer, and it's about how to, like, you know, make a profitable, you know, garden on like a quarter of an acre or something. Mm-hmm. And then Curtis Stone's kind of put it into action. But he talks about the biggest thing about having your garden in your front lawn is the conversations and the education piece that you can give to your neighbors and things. And even my last guest, this woman, Basha Dominice, who's in Boston, she's like that. She's just so passionate. This is a great episode. She talks about how much she loves just meeting her neighbors and the conversation piece from her garden in her front lawn. Mm-hmm. And it's so important. I think that's a great thing. Okay. So do you just have like a little inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden? Not that you haven't given us tons of great tips, and I knew you were going to be a wonderful guest. I've been like begging Leslie to come on the show since like last summer.
Yeah, I always had one thing or another going on, but
you're busy.
Connected and was able to do it. I don't know if I have like a quote or anything. I just want to add to that. I feel like for me personally, gardening is so therapeutic. It's my happy place. It's where I feel grounded. It just brings me peace. It's known to like reduce stress levels. And in our world of, you know, go, go, busy, 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 it's such a nice way to just unwind and connect with the earth and yourself. And I've gardened with friends and neighbors and family, and it's a way to connect with people. That's why I like the idea of the community garden. So I don't know. I guess that's not really a quote, but.
No, that's perfect. It doesn't have to be a quote at all. Just, I think that works great. And that's funny. That's what Basha said too. Hers was, what is it? Something about gardening is cheaper than therapy and you get tomatoes.
Right.
So,
I love that.
Yeah, it's so interesting. You guys had a lot in common. So, but she's just a young pup starting out. She's just in college and just she's funny. So, well, Leslie, thank you so much for sharing with us today. I know this is going to be a top downloaded because you just were so informative and gave us tons of great concrete tips, because, you know, your knowledge is so full and your garden is just gorgeous, absolutely beautiful. Every year I've driven by there every summer, I think, always, and look down there, and just, it's just lovely. So
thank you.
If you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.